Brendan Collins, very good off speed. It's nothing like his, though. Freeze it like pay raises at a poorly run cryogenics laboratory.
It is Joey Zanaboni, the play-by-play voice of the Fredericksburg Nationals. I've heard your work for a couple of months now. I think you probably got a lot of attention with Steven Strasburg making a rehab assignment. Joey, thanks for taking a few minutes to spend with the Killer Bees out in Houston, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. How much did your phone blow up after calling Strasburg's rehab assignment the other day?
I had to change my number. You're calling me at a new number. That's how much it blew up after that with Steven Strasburg. It was just crazy. You know, I knew he would be there for that second rehab start, and just thankful, man. Thankful that he went out there and faced just one over the minimum. He's got the easy job. I got the hard one.
So, obviously, looking at your resume and everything, Joey, you are a broadcaster that has high aspirations. It's something you want to do as a career. You pattern your game after something. You got a little John Sterling in there. I mean, how much do you pattern your game after someone, and where do you get your inspiration from?
Well, being from St. Louis, really, I've patterned most of my baseball work after Mike Shannon, who was a longtime radio broadcaster for the Cardinals and just retired last year. But I take a lot of inspiration from fiction as well. There's some great broadcasters out there that I've borrowed some things from, like John Sterling. But I look to the Harry Doyles, played by Bob Uecker in Major League, and Jim Brockmeyer, played by Hank Azaria, because I do believe that the best sports announcing has been done in America in the last 30 or 40 years has come through fiction. And the perception that that's created characters like that have helped kind of alter and shape people's perceptions about sports announcing. And in this world that's increasingly a blend between fact and fiction, as a literature major, I think that I'm well positioned to start to kind of fill that hole.
Joey, on your Twitter, you can follow Joey at Joey_Zana. He is the play-by-play voice, again, for the Fredericksburg Nationals. We were playing some of his clips yesterday, having some fun with it. Joey, you have pinned on your Twitter, you say you want to be the first millennial sports announcer who reflects the endless optimism, relentless anxiety, and glorious randomness of this generation. Why is that the mindset? Why is that the philosophy there?
Because I think we're entering a new wave of human consciousness. I think people have a more fragmented view of what reality is because there's an entire generation behind my generation, the Gen Zs, the Generation Alphas, who have been raised under the umbrella of the Internet and who have been raised with mobile computing and Internet connection just taken for granted. And it's not just a matter of convenience, but it's reshaped their minds and shown them a different kind of way that the world is than even people who were, from more of my generation. And I just don't know that it resounds with them or resonates with them, some of the traditional avenues of sports announcing and some of the traditional avenues of sports itself. TikTok and apps like that have created different realities. And if you want to keep some of these great American traditions, and I do believe there are only three great traditions that have been born, artistically speaking, in America. That would be the Western, jazz, and baseball announcing. If we want to keep these going, we have to find a way to appeal and to make accessible for this next generation the greatest elements of those things.
I mean, Joey, you are an inspirational success story, not only just amongst the social media crowd, and like you mentioned, for the calls that you've made, but, you know, just from a broadcasting perspective, I'm curious what advice you'd give to some guy struggling just to be a Division I college announcer that basically wallows around doing sideline on football and play-by-play on baseball or basketball, trying to make it to your levels and beyond.
Well, first off, I appreciate that a lot. That really does mean a lot. I consider myself to be the luckiest person in professional baseball and just incredibly fortunate to be in the position that I'm in. And if I had to give one piece of advice, it's embrace failure, because as far as minor league baseball, affiliated minor league baseball is gone, I believe that I've been rejected by every single minor league baseball team there is, including the team that I'm working for right now, about to get on a bus to a 7 o'clock game with the Fredericksburg Nationals. Back when they were the Potomac Nationals, you know, I tried to get in, and it just didn't work out at that time. No hard feelings, obviously, or anything like that, but, you know, they were part of about the 75-80% of teams in minor league baseball who have rejected me, some kindly, some not so kindly, just keep on coming. And I spent 6 years in independent baseball. I spent 3 years calling community college baseball, 2 years calling NCAA Division II baseball. Like many other broadcasters, you know, I had to deal with the slowdown of the pandemic and the cancellation of sports and things like that. But just keep on going and do it for reasons that are your own. Find the why. And for myself, you know, it's something that's near and dear to my heart, being the descendant of Italian immigrants from St. Louis. You know, my grandfather told me once that he did not teach his children Italian because he didn't want them to face the persecution that he faced in the 30s and 40s growing up. And his dream was to have one of his descendants master the English language and to have a way to make the language his or her own. And that really is my goal beyond sports. And from that great tradition, the Hill in St. Louis, the Italian neighborhood in St. Louis that gave the world Joe Garagiola, Yogi Berra, I feel that I'm part of that tradition, and I feel like that's really my why.
Joey, a few of the calls we played yesterday on our show, John Stamos, Full House, get him out of there, baby, ghosting him like OK Cupid Halloween party, sneak a live cat through a TSA pre-check, boy, hiss. Steven Strasburg asked for his credit card info and a spam email message. Let's go fishing with a PH. Freezing them like pay raises at a poorly run cryogenics laboratory. What's your favorite and where the heck do you come up with this stuff?
Even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. It doesn't always come out as easy as you think, but... I mean, it took 4 years of studying poetry in college, I'll say, and then it takes commitment every day to sit down and try to find a way to salvage cliches around baseball. That's really kind of what I see as sort of my side mission, is to take things that are almost always said in baseball and then maybe become a little bit tired and just find a way to have fun with them. And in the words of the great Doris Burke, if you're having fun, then everybody listening is going to be having fun as well. And that's really the key at the end of the day. I mean, I go out there, I work hard, I try to get to the stadium early, I try to put a lot of thought into what I'm doing, but in the end, if you're not having fun, then it's not going to come out right, but if you are and you speak from the heart, then I think it always does.
I'm curious, man, when you're doing your charts for a game and you're taking your notes and putting in your stats, are you also putting in some of the potential lines that you could use, depending on if it's a home run call or a key pitching moment like you did with Strasburg?
Oh, yeah, man. My forearms are always full of pen ink at the end of the night. I usually just try to write them on my arm so nobody finds a piece of paper. But I'll occasionally think of something, you know, that might be funny usually when I'm falling asleep and kind of write it down the next day. But you got to be real patient with them, and you got to have a way of letting them develop and letting them come to you. And so sometimes I think that, you know, you might have a line, but you drop it in at the wrong moment. It just doesn't come out quite the way you wanted it to, but with patience and with time, I think they always end up standing out.
Joey, you mentioned that the reaction isn't always positive. I'm sure that there's a lot of people that love the calls. I'm sure there's people that hear the calls and say, who is this joker? Who is this clown? Mm-hmm. What is that negativity? What do you hear? What's that feedback that you get, and then how do you handle it?
I think anytime you're trying to do something different, I think there's people who are going to disagree. That doesn't have anything to do with baseball or sports. That's really just the ironclad law of creativity or artistic pursuit. There's always going to be people that are uncomfortable. And sometimes, unfortunately, that's people who maybe have a position of status or a position of power in one paradigm, and they don't want it to shift to another paradigm that might put them outside. I never take any of that personally, because I never hold animosity toward individuals. The only thing that I despise in this world or hate in this world is groupthink, hive mind, and sort of that thing that keeps us all running in circles without society advancing forward. Again, I really do believe that we're at the tip of the wave of a new phase of human consciousness, and I'm just happy to be along for the ride. If there's negativity and things like that, sure, I see it, but I don't really take it personally, and I don't hold it personally against those people. For the doubters, the quote-unquote haters, I still wish them the absolute best. I hope that they're able to live every single dream and be able to do what I've been able to do, which is to live out that childhood dream and see it come true.
Where does the life's highway pull up into a driveway, Joey? Where do you find the mansion of your career success and say, this is where I want to be, my goals, my aspirations? Is it to be a Major League Baseball play-by-play guy? Is it, you know, something else that we might not have even guessed? Where does this take you?
For me, it's the major leagues. I firmly believe that whatever team comes calling will have the most exciting and most entertaining broadcast in the world, not just in America or in the major leagues, but anywhere in the world for the sport of baseball. As I get older, though, I take a lot of heart and a lot of inspiration out of a Zen legend from, I believe it was 12th century Japan. He's a Zen master, and he's giving a lecture, and a man stands up in the middle of the lecture and says, this is all well and good, but my master can stand on one side of a river and cast a spell to see to it that a really interesting and complicated character, some ink, appears on a piece of paper on the other side of the river. And the Zen master just says, that's fine, and it's a cool trick, but my true miracle is when I'm hungry, I eat, and when I'm thirsty, I drink. And it's about finding that satisfaction in the everyday of life, whether it's a cup of coffee, a bus ride, a minor league baseball game, and that's really what I intend to do.
Joey.
I thought that was Carl the groundskeeper from Caddyshack, who also said, I don't think the hard stuff's coming down for quite some time.
Exactly.
Joey, a lot of people who like Zen also like the cannabis. Do you partake? Just curious.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite calls was that ball's hitting the grass like a Willie Nelson tour bus.
That's
about all I'll say about that.
I think it's all you need to say. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes. Thanks for being a good sport about
good
it.
Luck,
Joey Zanaboni, best of luck.
Well,
yes, in the climb.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. And you all keep on doing your thing.
All right, we will. Joey Zanaboni, who is the play-by-play voice. We played him yesterday. Fredericksburg Nationals, if you want to take a listen. He's on Twitter at Joey_Zon. I like that guy, man. When you're hungry, eat. When you're thirsty, drink. I mean, that's great advice.
I didn't know Phil
by.
Jackson was that old.
That is great advice.
The Zen master.
He loves the triangle offense. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back. All right, I have the replacement for Yuli Gurriel at first base. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Frankie's Friday Fire. It's got not Brad Kellner's attention. He said, where's the Frankie's Friday Fire, dang it? Well, you bring it, Brad Kellner, not Brad Kellner. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. I had the replacement for Yuli Gurriel. Ninshin?
Is it going to be the same answer that everybody's had for all
week? I don't
week?
Think anybody's mentioned this name. What are some names you've mentioned?
You know the only name that it's with the wheelhouse, too, by Josh Bell.
No, it's not Josh Bell.
Okay, good.
Although,
willing to listen.
I'm okay with Josh Bell. Like, if it's Josh
Bell,
it's Josh
Bell.
Well,
I saw I put on the rundown the other day, too, that Paston did the players to watch between now and the deadline. And Josh Bell was on that list, too, although he didn't have him matched up with the Astros.
Who was he
matched
up
with? Although
he
said it was considered.
Who was he matched up with?
I'd have to look it up. But
there was one name matched up with the Astros.
Yeah, for sure.
Wilson Contreras. Which Wilson
now, by the way, rates out in his mind as the number one catcher.
He is the number one catcher probably available.
No, he just said in Major League Baseball, that's because Salvador Perez has been hurt, too. But in terms of intangibles, offense, and defense.
Did you see the video the other day, by the way, of whenever he was able to calm down the guy that was hitting in front of him on an 0-2 count? He didn't. I think it was a bad strike call.
Was that part of his, like a mound visit?
He was like, calm down. It was like, oh, man, got to have Wilson Contreras now with
it
that leadership that he possesses.
It was a movement of Zen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of channeling his best mound visit, but doing it on the offensive side.
Yeah, I was hooked. I was hooked. At that very moment, I was like, you know what? The Astros need Wilson Contreras. He's the type of guy that eats when he's hungry and drinks when he's thirsty. Mm-hmm. I think he is that type of guy. I would love Wilson Contreras with the Astros. I am concerned,
get him
though,
out of Chicago. like Uncle Joey in Full House. Get him here like John Stamos as quick as possible.
They lived in San Francisco.
I don't care. I'm talking about the Cubs.
Yeah, I'm just saying. At least make it accurate, man. Lived John Stamos in Full House. They were in San Francisco. The
like
Golden
Vince
Gate.
Vaughn had enough and kicked out Jennifer Aniston in the breakup.
Get him out and get him to
Houston.
Because he would do tours on the Chicago. Was it the Chicago River? I think it's one of the rivers that runs right through Chicago.
I just loved when he got into it with the kid playing video games, and then he would talk major smack to his mom.
The Home Alone was in Chicago too, right? How long does it take to get to the Chicago airport? Whatever. I would love Wilson Contreras. I'm scared that the package is going to be very, very big. So here's the.
But if the package brings a lot of dong,
I don't know why you went there.
Well, because you would normally do so.
Well, yeah, I think my references are strictly baseball, though.
Are they though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. Right. So, anyways, the name that I would be interested in. If Yuli Gurriel continues this horrible offensive production that he's been on the first third of the season, because it's a fact, he has been on a horrible, horrible start his first 50 games in. If he does not heat up through June, if he doesn't heat up in the first couple of weeks of July, the guy that I would be interested in inquiring is Trey Mancini from the Baltimore Orioles. He plays a good defensive first base. Here are some indicators of why I would like him. 305 batting average. What did you say?
I said that wouldn't be nuts.
Is that a nut?
I just think it wouldn't be a bad idea.
I don't understand.
That's all right. Someone will explain it to you.
Are you talking about his health condition?
No, I'm not. I said that wouldn't be nuts. I wouldn't think that would be the worst suggestion made.
Moving on. 305 batting average for Trey Mancini. 374 on base percentage for Trey Mancini. He doesn't slug as much as you would love for a first baseman.
But
422 is not bad. This year he's not slugging as much as he has in the past.
But he still has sneaky power.
He does. 797 OPS. 804 OPS for his career. He's also not that expensive. He only makes $7.5 million this year. And if you really want him back next year, a $10 million mutual option.
But that also means you're going to have to give up more to get him.
Does it, though? I don't think so. He's going to be 30 years old. He's 30 years old. He's about to be a free agent.
Like a folk hero with the Orioles, too.
He is a folk hero in Baltimore.
Yeah, and he's come back from health issues as well. And he's come back to succeed to where the Orioles, who are constantly seemingly rebuilding, are going to want some young prospects. Okay.
This could potentially be his last year in Baltimore. There's a mutual option at the end of the season. If Trey Mancini wants to leave Baltimore for greener pastures this offseason, he could leave Baltimore for absolutely nothing. So if it's only going to be a rental, because I don't think he would re-sign in Baltimore or pick up this mutual option in Baltimore, he probably wouldn't cost as much in terms of a trade package to get a Trey Mancini. Like, he's not a huge slugging first baseman.
So
he's a pretty good
first baseman.
What
do you think they got to give up? What they have currently, what do they got to give up to get Trey Mancini?
I don't think he'd be that expensive. I really don't. I don't even know if it would cost Leon. I think you could probably find some lower A prospects, maybe two of them, to get a Trey Mancini. I don't think Mancini's going to be that expensive. I really don't, because he's not going to be somebody that you would offer the qualifying offer to, because you're not going to pay him $19 million a year. He has the mutual option, so if you do trade for him, maybe he loves it in Houston, maybe you love him, you keep him around as well. He's an upgrade offensively over Yuli
Gurriel.
He can
play outfield as well, can he not?
That's the
other
thing.
There you go, because Brantley, next season with Brantley going, he can fit right into left field.
He gives you some insurance, too, whether it's injury, plus he's a right-handed bat. You have a lot of lefties in this bat, so another righty wouldn't be all that bad. Plus, he can play the corner outfield positions. Now, he's not very good defensively in the outfield, but he can play there. He could go out there if you absolutely needed him to. And you're right. If you do sign him again to the mutual option, $10 million next season, he gives you some flexibility with the roster going into next season. Also, you want to nerd out for a second?
You do.
If you look at his expected home runs by ballpark, the way that his ball flies off the bat, it is perfect. To Minute Maid Park. Look at his last expected home runs in the last few years. If he was playing at Minute Maid Park last year as a member of the Houston Astros, he would have hit 28 home runs. 2019, remember he missed 2020 because of the health concerns, he would have hit 36. The year before that, 31. The year before that, 33. He's a right-hander that has pretty even splits, can hit lefties and righties both very well, and he pulls the ball to left field. He could take advantage of the Crawford boxes. Trey Mancini would be a steal for the Houston Astros.
Well, not only that, but you know, you've seen Aaron Judge come out this year. They realign the fences. It's even more of a pitcher's park.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's been a big point of contention. It's like basically taking Baggy or someone out of the lineup, out of the dome, and putting them in Minute Maid and saying, you know, what ifs? So it would be great to add a guy like that, put him in the dome. I mean, put him from a dome situation to Minute Maid where he could just tee off. That would be fantastic. You asked about the potential landing spots other than Houston for Bell. Milwaukee. They said Milwaukee, he would be a perfect tie-in at first base for the Brewers. If not, then he said the Astros should be a team that's interested.
I'd be cool with Bell. I like the idea of Mancini a lot. You mentioned how Baltimore all of a sudden has turned into Yellowstone, yeah, where it's impossible to hit home runs there. It's the hardest ballpark to hit home runs in Major League Baseball. Mancini right now has 4 home runs with the Orioles. His expected home runs by ballpark, if he was playing in Houston, he would have 10. So it gives you an idea of what Camden Yards is playing at right now, and then also the flight of the baseballs off the bat of Trey Mancini. It plays to Minute Maid Park. I'm telling you, James Click, you're high on my list right now. I've given you a 10 out of a 10 because you signed Yordan Alvarez to a half-dozen-year extension for $115 million. 10 out of 10. You go out and trade for Trey Mancini, watch him bloom. Watch him peak. As a member of the Houston Astros.
I'm not opposed to it, especially because the contract's affordable, too. I mean, you know some of the guys. Look, and I'll tell you this, and I don't know if they're willing to do it or not, but the guy that I was talking about a year ago was Cedric Mullins, the center fielder. And I don't know if they've changed their stance on a young guy that they weren't sure they were going to
get. He's been kind of quiet.
They were going to trade on. He's not obviously doing as much. He killed the Astros a year ago. He was a big reason why the Orioles had their way in more than games than they should have against the Astros. But he's a really solid center fielder. I don't think Click's ready to look at anything with outfield in center field yet till he sees what happens once he gets his full complement back.
I wonder if we see Myers in the outfield today because he started his rehab assignment with Sugar
League yesterday.
I believe
he is supposed to start in Sugar or for the Space Cowboys tonight.
Yeah, so that'd be cool to see him get some ABs over there with the Space Cowboys. If you can't make it out to Constellation Field, you can listen to all of the Space Cowboy games on ESPN 92.5. 0830 asking me the hard questions. Would you trade Corey Jolks for Mancini? Man, that's hard because Corey Jolks is a Cougar.
Mm-hmm.
I would do it. I would. I would trade Jolks for Mancini. 4567, Mancini has a huge bat. He can hit the ball far, too. That's what I look for in baseball players. I like big bats that hit the ball far. Like a Yordan Alvarez. It's what I like about Yordan. Adrian said, would a Siri for Mancino do it? I think it would. No, I don't. No. Jose Siri's 26, 27 years old. He's not a prospect.
You brought it up before, but not many people talk about the fact that they just think because he was a late bloomer to the big leagues that he's suddenly this young, hot, up-and-coming prospect, and they don't realize how old he actually is.
Maybe Chaz McCormick? But they probably
go ahead, take him.
They would probably want a minor leaguer. They would want a minor leaguer with some upside.
I think it's going to take more than just a guy that's currently on your roster. Yeah, you definitely have to throw at least one prospect because the Orioles aren't anywhere close to competing, and so they need more young players.
They probably want an 18, 19, 20-year-old with
upside. They want a Rockets-like scenario. If they're going to continue to rebuild, now what they got a whole bunch of young picks that are starting to blossom, especially pitchers and other position players. That's why Mullins might be out of the picture for them because by the time the rest of the kids are ready to prime time it, Mullins will be past his. I think that's why they want some prospects to keep growing.
Keep in mind, it's Mike Elias. I think that's his first name. But Elias, who was the GM with Baltimore, was the right hand, handmaid for Jeff Luhnow for a long time. So he might like a lot of players in this system as well. There are actually a lot of former Astros playing in Baltimore, a lot of the fringe players. But I think he would want some youth. I don't think, though, that it would be the top prospects for Trey Mancini. So bring Trey Mancini home. It's not his home, but bring him here. Bring him to Houston. 713-780-ESPN. You okay with that idea? How would you feel about Trey Mancini replacing Yuli Gurriel? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, we'll take some of your reaction. Also, there is an attorney here, big-time attorney, Rusty Harden, who's on a mobile. He'll be joining the Killer Bees next.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
6670 says, Urquidy, Prospect Lee. I don't know if that's one prospect, Corey Lee, or if it's prospect and Corey Lee. And maybe another prospect or two gets Mancini and Mullins. Would you do it? I don't think Baltimore is going to be interested in Jose Urquidy. He's too old. Like I really don't think that Baltimore would have any interest in a current major leaguer. Like, it's going to need to be
Said. It's the Rockets mold and model right now where you're trying to keep your nucleus of young players all around the same age. So when they all, assuming that they all are going to hit on them, and they blossom. They're all ready to play together and create a situation like the Astros have had for so many years with that core four and the group around them.
I'm not huge in depleting my farm system. I usually don't like trading tons of prospects for players at the deadline, especially just rentals that you're going to be here for a few months. Like Randy Johnson obviously worked out tremendous. And Luno in the past would always trade for guys that were under club control for a little while. So I kind of like that mold. And then last year we saw from Click that he would trade big leaguers for big leaguers. So it'll be interesting to see if Click goes away from that this year. But there is a, like, this farm system's not great. Outside of Hunter Brown, who I really want to keep, if I could get Trey Mancini and Cedric Mullins back in a deal for Baltimore, there's not a whole lot that I wouldn't trade for a package of those two.
I can see that. I would love that.
Wouldn't that excite you, Mancini and Mullins?
Without a question, because it handles two of the biggest issues you have with your lineup on a day-to-day basis with younger guys that are, again, going to be part of what could be conceivably your core, whether it be four or more, going forward. If you can wrap up Tucker, you got Yordan, you got your center fielder of the future, and you know how far that future goes, I don't know, but for the next 3 to 5 years in Mullins, and then you get a guy that can be your new first baseman, you're well on your way to putting a lineup that can kind of mirror your rotation. Then you worry about your closer of the future, some bullpen guys that are always going to be out there that you can kind of find and bring in, and maybe a bat here or there, and you're going to be contending for at least a division title for years to come.
I think Mullins will be harder to obtain. I think Mancini would be easier to obtain. 713-780-ESPN.
So we use the Houston analogies. From a Houston analogy, Texans perspective-wise, to Orioles, the real carrot that they have that they're expecting to get the return on would still be Mullins.
Oh, yeah.
He would be their last remaining big asset for something to bring back,
yeah,
as opposed to guys that are going to try to get out anyway.
Mullins can probably give them a pretty significant return, mm-hmm, whereas Mancini, I think, can give them a prospect or two that they like but isn't as significant, like not a top 25-30 prospect in Major League Baseball. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Rolando, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Rolando?
What's going on, guys? Happy Frankie's Friday Fire.
Is that right? Yeah, happy, yes, Frankie's Friday Fire, yeah.
All right. Hey, guys. I want to talk about this, our first base situation. I love Yuli. He was with us in 2017 and now. But I want to win another championship. Sorry, man. He does have to go. I don't know if he's going to leave us, or maybe he can be our backup first baseman. I don't know what to do with him. But I heard y'all talking about bringing Josh Bell and I forgot the other name y'all just
Mancini.
Said. But I want to give y'all three more names: DJ Chrome, Reese Hoskins, and what was the last one? Ty France. I know he's in our division, but the Astros are not scared of the Mariners.
Okay, Rolando. Appreciate
the
call.
I think those are some names.
Yeah,
you broke up a little bit there, yeah, Rolando, but appreciate the call.
But first of all, Seattle, France is one of their pieces for their future. He ain't going anywhere. And he's the biggest bright spot they have on their squad right now, currently, with the exception of
the young
center fielder. Yeah, some of the guys that they have. Reese Hoskins makes up a lot of money. And I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon in Philly either, as Joe Girardi got fired today, but that's because they're underachieving. They expect that group of players to do better, and I don't think they're going to break them up. They're going to keep them together.
Hoskins, I think, is a name to watch. He has another year of arbitration next season, which is supposed to take a pretty good spike. And then Cron, I think, could be a name too. But I prefer Trey Mancini. I prefer Josh Bell. Josh Bell will be second on my list if I'm looking to upgrade at first base. Trey Mancini will be first. 713-780-ESPN. All right, so we got a call on the line. 713-780-3776. The HRMP guest line. This Deshaun Watson saga has been playing out for a while, which I'm fascinated with, of course. Ocho just texted in a little while ago, too, saying, I appreciate you guys not flooding us with Watsongate S-word. I understand it's relevant locally, but bless you for not leading with it or allowing it to dominate the show. I'm so sick of it. I want more of it. But Rusty Harden, on a mobile, he has called the Killer Bees. He wants a chance to speak out in representing his client, one Deshaun Watson, on a mobile, four, who's been traded to the Cleveland Browns, on a mobile. Rusty, thanks so much for calling in. Why are you calling the Killer Bees today?
It's my pleasure, Jeremy. See, here's the thing. After Deshaun has made such a big impact on the city of Houston,
I just didn't want to go to the highway of hell alone and give them my quotes and my inspirational information to gentlemen that will want to still frequent some of the clubs that we call massage parlors in the city of Houston and across the South. So I figured, you know, let's just share the wealth and let's be an equal opportunity lawyer, so to speak.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, Deshaun obviously is facing now 24 accusations from 24 different women.
Same lawyer on the other side, though. It's the same guy that you know that I just don't really like to speak about.
Okay, that's fair. Deshaun Watson has one lawyer, too, right?
That would be me, and I'm the best.
It's hard to debate. You've had a great, you know, long list of history with Roger Clemens, Adrian Peterson, a lot of high-profile clients that you've had, Mr. Harden.
I've respected and represented the Rocket. Now we can talk about Deshaun and the Rocket.
Mr. Harden, can you tell us why happy endings are legal in the state of Texas?
They're not against the law, Jeremy. Sometimes the consequences are what's paid, but with dollar figures. Sometimes it's just the satisfaction that comes with getting someone that does their job at an extremely high level. And I think that Deshaun got wrapped into a situation because everybody seems to sit there and believe what they want to read. But at the end of the day, I mean, as I said earlier today, I mean, you contemplate the situation and the consequences. Sometimes things just pop up in the middle that have to be addressed.
Mr. Harden, we appreciate you calling in and explaining a little bit of your side. Of course, two sides to every story. So you know that you being an attorney for so long, you know how this drill works. How come Deshaun has not settled so far to this point?
Well, because I think in the same way that when you think about it from the standpoint of the punishment and the consequences, we've done everything to participate and be a part of the process with the NFL. It's the NFL that's going to decide at the end of the day how long this drags out. But we're willing to do it for the full constituted allowed time because of the fact that we believe that we're innocent. And as part of innocence, unless it's taken away from you like certain massage therapists like to accuse, I believe that we believe that we're going to stay in the same court of opinion as everybody else, that Deshaun is innocent and he is going to be America's success story at some point for the Cleveland Browns.
Do you think he was close to settling before November 2nd? There was rumors, Mr. Harden, that he was reported to go to Miami, that he wanted to be a Dolphin, and that he was very close at the time on 20 or 22 of the cases. Why didn't you get anything settled at that point, but were very close to doing it?
I don't think it'd be appropriate at this point in time, Jeremy, to get into too many of the details, though I do love you and I follow you because of the fact that I see you all the time at the Cougars games.
Very, very tight,
And I know that we speak frequently about the fact that I just believe in you, and that's why I'm here. But I believe that at the end of the day, I'm not going to give up too many details other than knows that smutmonger that's representing the other people is not a guy that wants to do anything other than run for mayor, and I'm not trying to run for mayor. I'm trying to just get another one of my clients the justice that they deserve.
Is it true that you're trying to beat death?
I don't think death has an advantage over me. I think that Vegas had early odds that were definitely going to be in the favor of the better if they go in the right direction, if you know what I mean.
Does Tony Busby worry you?
Nothing that man does or says worries me because of his fact that he would rather put his Bentley on Instagram than be a man of the people like I am, being a courtside season ticket holder for the Cougars and the Rockets.
Mr. Harden, is Deshaun Watson a pervert at the very least?
Deshaun is a fine, upstanding gentleman that has been very gracious in the way that he has compensated me to represent him as we go through this long and winding road. There is no end to this road at this time, and I believe my limousine, bigger than Tony's Bentley, is going to be what carries us to the finish. And I believe that we are in it for the long haul, and we are going to do whatever is necessary so that justice is served. And at the end of the day, Deshaun gets what he deserves, and we believe fully that he will be exonerated.
Well, Mr. Harden, I'm always a big fan of your work. I think that you're brilliant at what you do.
I know you've made a lot of money. I must say your mustache is extremely exquisite.
I wouldn't disagree. Thank you for sharing your side of the story. I wish you the very best, and I hope that this heads to court with Deshaun Watson.
Go Cougs, and let's go Rockets.
All right, I want to tell you why I do want to see this Deshaun Watson in court. Also, the offense or the defense? Which side of the ball is going to be better for the Houston Texans? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Not Santa saying, can we get Rusty having a conversation with Cal?
I think it would be difficult to align up, but I believe there's something that we should consider.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate Mr. Harden on a mobile.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. It's a pleasure.
Calling in a little bit earlier to discuss.
Oh, I was supposed to hang up last segment. Hold up. Thank you.
Yeah, Harden was on the highway to hell earlier and was talking about how happy endings are not illegal. That's cool.
Like, why would you say
that? That's great for Deshaun.
Like, you're representing him. You are claiming and believing fully that your client will be found innocent. And you don't have to say anything. Just let Tony do all the talking and keep on talking and keep trying to push the high road. And then you finish the interview with that today.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little bit bizarre, especially for a guy who wants to clean his name, right? Like, yeah. He wants to clean his name. It's why he hasn't settled, right? It's why he almost settled with the November 2nd because he wanted to play for the Dolphins. He prioritizes football as opposed to cleaning his name, which, I mean, I don't necessarily blame him for that. Football is going to be something that makes him millions and millions worth of dollars, which we all know that. It needs a deadline to me. And like, to be honest with you, now that Deshaun's been traded, now that he's not in this city, now that he's the Cleveland Browns problem and Nick Caserio got three first rounders for Deshaun Watson, I don't want all the legal stuff to go away. Now, we're not going to talk about it for 3 hours, 12 to 3, Monday through Friday. We promise you that. But I do want that drama to linger around Deshaun Watson. I do want the black cloud and the stain on Deshaun Watson's name. And to be completely honest with you, I want it to go to court. I want Tony Busby and Rusty Harden in the same courtroom, cross-examination, normal examination, asking questions to all of the accusers, asking questions to Deshaun Watson. I want it to all play out publicly so we can see just how big of a dirtbag Deshaun Watson is.
Well, and I think that Court TV would be right there with you wanting to do it. They would love to make sure that they could cover those court proceedings live, because that would be must-see TV just to see the two lawyers just going at it blow for blow and comment for comment in the courtroom. I believe that that is something that definitely would be sought after by some kind of a broadcast entity, because of the fact that you've got such big characters representing both sides. I don't think we're ever going to get there. But I hear what you're saying, man. I mean, you talk about the way that this kid came into this city as opposed to the way he exited. And the fact that he was the savior on the football field, and then he was the darling of the city for everything that he did off of it, and the fact that he could do no wrong for the first couple of years, to sit there and look at, you said stained, but I mean just tarnished an image for a lifetime, not just a career, for a lifetime by the time he left. And the fact that they're still piling on. There's still more surfacing to where now, like I said the other day, I'm so glad that it's somebody else's problem, because I don't think they're far from it's far from done.
Yeah, see, I think it's far from done. I want to see it play out just like the Heard Johnny Depp stuff played out. Even if it goes to court and the judge rules, or the jury, whoever's ruling on it, that Deshaun Watson's like 100% clean in all of this, that he doesn't have to pay out any, you know, money, any damages, anything like that. Just the fact that if it got to court, I think it would be such a negative stain and a bad perception on Deshaun Watson that he can't let it get there, even if he's completely innocent in all of this. And at the very best case, he's just a pervert, right? That's kind of what they're hoping for. That's what Rusty Harden freaking said today. He basically said, my client's nothing more than a pervert that's getting happy endings that aren't illegal in the state of Texas, as long as you're not paying more money for it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What is better for the Houston Texans entering the 2022 season? Is it the offensive side of the football, or is it the defensive side?
I think it's
of
offense.
The football. Really?
I think the offense is better than the defense, I think, because they concentrated so much on it. I mean, it starts with the offensive line. The fact that if you can solidify the offensive line and you can put together, you know, and leave them in the positions they're supposed to be playing, guys that, you know, prove to be offensive linemen in this league that can be starters and can be effective. And it starts with a healthy Tunsil, and that's a big if, along with hopefully his desire to want to play a full season if he is healthy. But if he's your left tackle, Howard's your right tackle. Kenyon Green was drafted to improve the run game and be a guard, and he can be that for you. Look, the three-fifths of your offensive line is a really solid start to an above-average offensive line in this league. You finally addressed the running game to at least get a veteran that had at one point not so long ago been a very, very good running back for the Colts. You added a young running back from Florida that's going to help fortify the position way better than your fighting Rex Burkhead is. And then you've seen second year of Collins, the veteran that you have in Cooks, and the fact that you hope Mechie's a guy that could be in the slot and be a guy that's going to be a long-term solution. I believe that you addressed almost everything you possibly could. In terms of the defense, I think it was more so of relying on Lovie and his experience, giving him more than he had. Obviously, you upgraded the secondary, but I don't know if that's enough to say that you upgraded enough pieces within the defense.
Yeah. See, I think it's actually the defensive side of the ball.
Do you think they're going to have a pass rush to be able to put pressure on the quarterback?
I like John Grenard quite a bit. Yeah, I'm
sure offensive coordinators are going to block him a little bit differently, too.
Well, they also upgraded the other side, too, because they brought in Jerry Hughes, even though he's 73 years old. He's over the hill, but he's an upgrade.
Okay.
He's an upgrade over who they had last year.
But can he get to the quarterback still?
I think he can draw enough attention to where it's not going to be Jonathan Grenard facing double team after double team. And also, like, I think Christian Harris is an upgrade for what they have in the middle there at the linebacker spot. Derek Stingley Jr. is obviously an upgrade what they had at the corner spot. The number two, number three spots are actually pretty good, too. Jalen Petrie brought in there. I like Jalen Petrie quite a bit. I think he's going to be a factor as well. Now, I don't think it's a huge divide, if I'm being completely honest with you. I think the defense is going to be somewhere around 22 to 25 in the NFL, and I think that the offense is probably going to be somewhere between 25 through 27. Like, the running game, I still don't love this running game. Is it an upgrade over what they had last year? Sure. Marlon Mack.
But I think Mack's the great unknown, right? You don't know what you've got. Can he be closer to the Mack of the Colts, or can he be a guy that's trying to, you know, desperately come back that doesn't have what he wants to, in terms of his burst and his ability to change direction?
No, you don't. And look, Damian Pierce, I like Damian Pierce. I don't think he's going to be great as a rookie. I think it's going to take a little bit of time before Damian Pierce can, you know, materialize to be the Damian Pierce that all Texans fans are hoping that he can be. I like Brandon Cooks. I think Brandon Cooks is a very solid wide receiver. If you look at the best Texans, right, Laremy Tunsil would probably be at the highest part, the number one player on this team, like Madden ratings. He'd probably have the best Madden rating, right? So he's a left tackle. Brandon Cooks is probably number two. He's a wide receiver. And then after that, I think you have a bunch of the defensive guys. So I don't think that there's a huge gap between the offense and the defense. And don't get me wrong, I don't think either side of the ball is going to be top half of the NFL. I don't think the defense is going to be top half. I don't think the offense is going to be top half in the NFL. I think both of them will be improved, and I think the defense is going to be slightly better than the offense. And that's kind of where the Texans were last year.
I'm curious what people think. I mean, I'm curious because of the fact that I think that they put so much stock into the offense this year. Because otherwise, if they hadn't made the changes they made and drafted who they drafted in terms of
They put stock both sides, though, right?
They did, but I mean, I understand from Lovie's perspective. Look, I mean, you're right, because the two number one picks, you got one on each side of the football.
Yeah, we debated this
leading into it, right. But I just think there was so much more to lose if you didn't enhance the offense and then you took a guy that you were evaluating and didn't give him his best chance to succeed. So that's why I think they spent more time and effort on the offense, and I think that the offense needed it, but I believe that's why they took a step in front of the defense in terms of one side or the other.
Yeah, Frankie's Friday Fires, if you want to bring the heat, what is better, the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. And look, if we're being completely honest, I don't think either side of the ball is going to be top 15 in the league. Like, neither side of the ball is going to carry you to a 9-8 record. I think that they're both improving, and I think that they're both improving with young players, which is good. I just mentioned the defense with Petrie, with Stingley, with Harris. I'm really excited about the future of Jonathan Grenard as well. Can he step up to be a double-digit sack guy in the NFL? He had 8 last year. I think it's feasible. So I like the fact that the defense is improving with young guys, but you can say the same thing with the offensive side of the ball. I think the offense will be improved from last year, and you're doing it with young players, with Davis Mills, with John Metchie. What's he going to look like? What's Nico Collins going to look like? Brandon Cooks is a little bit older. Laremy Tunsil is a little bit older, but then Kenyon Green to the line. How is he going to stabilize it? Titus Howard at right tackle. So that's kind of where both sides of the ball, I do like the direction. I still think that they have a long way to go, but I like the direction, and I like that both sides of the ball are doing with the young guys.
No, you're right. I just think that to your point on Grenard, I think the biggest thing is that no one really knew what to expect and really weren't too worried about him going into a game plan a year ago, and now because of what he did a year ago, they're going to focus more on him, which means other guys are going to have to step up, and I don't know who those other guys are that are going to have the capabilities of stepping up as it relates to putting pressure on the quarterback. I do really think that, which was much needed, the improvements that they made across the secondary will help, from Petrie and Stingley to some of the guys they brought in, starting with Stevie Nelson. Yeah. I believe that they've already upgraded the secondary. I believe that they had a decent front seven in terms of services. They made some picks along the way that I think is going to help make them better. The picks of the past have got to step up and to show more and be more of a factor for this team. Not that it's something that Caserio has to worry about in terms of it wasn't on his watch, but from the standpoint of you've got to determine how long you're going to keep him on your team.
And to me, to your point, the fact that you want something opposite of Jonathan Greenard, so he's not getting all of the attention. Nick Caserio and the Texans have admitted that they're looking for that too, because look at all of the players they brought in that they're hoping to find something at the opposite defensive end spot from Greenard. They brought Ogbu in from, you know, the guy that used to play for the Rams, Jerry Hughes, one that we mentioned, Mario Addison, Derek Rivers. They also brought in Rasheem Green. So there's a lot of guys here that are like, eh, fringe players, right? Fringe starters in the NFL. They're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle opposite of Jonathan Greenard. But also you have Roy Lopez and Malik Collins. Now, they're not, you know, really worried about them being able to get to the quarterback a ton, but they eat some space. I think that the Texans have the chance. And look, we talked about this last year, and I criticized it a lot too, talking out of both sides of my mouth. Texans had the 31st defense in the NFL last year. Now, the offense put them in bad spots. And let's also keep in mind, Lovie Smith is the head coach. Like, the fact that you have a defensive-minded head coach, I think, could come into play as well. Long story short, though, I like the direction of both the offense and the defensive sides. Long way to go, but I do think it's an upgrade over where they were last year, and I am so happy that Nick Caserio didn't patch it together with a bunch of fighting Rex Burkheads. Take your lumps and let the young players grow.
I think the way we look at this is that the more that the kind of the dust settles and the smoke clears, You got two general managers right now that are stepping up a little bit that are making me happy to have them represent my football team and my baseball team right now.
I was thinking about that the other day on the drive in. The fact that I like James Click. I wish he would do a little bit more. And today he took a big step towards doing that, if we're being completely honest. But I like the cut of his jib, right? I like listening to him talk. He sounds like he knows what he's doing. Same thing with Nick Caserio. Like, the body of work isn't great yet, but I like the direction. I like the cut of his jib. I like the way that he sounds. Rafael Stone, look, I think he has I think he hit on Jalen Green, and I think he's going to hit on number three. So I like the general managers in the city.
I'll leave it there for now.
Don't you think he hit on Jalen Green?
I think Jalen Green fell right into his lap, and I think that whoever's left of the three are going to fall right into his lap at number three, unless he takes Jaden Ivey. Then I'm not going to be too impressed. Ooh,
I think you'll get a lot of bashing from the Killer Bees if that's the case. 713-780-ESPN, Frankie's Friday Fire. Offense, defense, what will be better for the Texans in 2022? 713-780-3776. So the Astros have signed Yordan Alvarez to a six-year extension, $115 million. A lot of Yordongs on the horizon. And the man that's going to be calling those, Todd Callis, joins us next on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.